financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
You know, we love, love, love our nurses, and we really appreciate our docs.
Yes.
And we assume, because they're honest people, that the whole bill is going to be honest and everything in it is going to be honest. No, they're two different universes.
We are going to crush some medical debt today. Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
I'm always happy when we have a guest joining us. It's always fun.
Look who we have. We have Dr. Virgie Bright Ellington. Yes, like Duke Ellington, for those of you who know the musician side of me. And she is an internal medicine physician, a medical expert for billing, okay, and what I would call a fierce patient advocate. Okay, so she's the author. You know those books that are, hey, 10 things your person doesn't want you to know?
Yes.
And you hear that title over and over. This is not that. She is the author of What Your Doctor Wants You to Know, which I think is pretty cool, to crush medical debt. What Your Doctor Wants You to Know to Crush Medical Debt. And the founder of Crush Medical Debt.
Finance Wellness, that's it.
So I want to welcome her to the show, but I want to tell a little tale out of school about her first. I hope she doesn't mind.
Oh, no.
But after dealing with her own overwhelming medical bills, she's a two-time cancer patient survivor, if I'm correct about that. She took her insider knowledge of health insurance billing and turned it into a simple three-step process that anybody can follow to crush their medical debt. So,
and I feel like everyone has medical debt, right? Pretty much.
Unfortunately, too many do. Not everyone does yet, but it's increasing. And for a few years now, several years now, it's been the number one cause. Medical bills are the number one cause of debt and bankruptcy in the United States.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a big deal. It's a big, scary deal.
So welcome, Dr. Virgie. Is it okay if we call you Dr. Virgie?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me, Dr. Francis and Jess. Always good talking to you guys. Good seeing you guys.
Well, you're entirely welcome. I'm very happy. It took a long time to get you on the show. You're a busy woman, but we're really happy to have you. First, I want to ask you, is it true? She looks at me like, oh my gosh, I'm on the spot now. Is it true that up to 9 out of 10 medical bills have errors and that you might be paying money you don't actually owe? Is that really true?
It is true. The statistics show on average 8 out of 10,
okay.
But there's a couple of studies that show up to 9 out of 10. But I go with the more conservative number, 8 to 9 out of 10, 80% basically. That's a lot. That's still
it's crazy.
A huge amount. And it's frightening and it's sad.
Yeah,
how
it's
do you
crazy.
Know if there's a mistake on there. Like for example, like, yes, if it's anesthesia and you know you didn't get anesthesia, that seems like an obvious one. But how do you know if it's something they did for you or they didn't do for you?
So great question, Jess. So what I just usually say, hey, just open the bill. Usually the first bill is not a real bill. It's usually not correct.
Okay.
You know? So I just say, don't think about, okay, what did they bill me for that's wrong? Just go through the three steps to make sure that you're on the right path. Okay, this is probably what I owe, or there's something a little off. Something doesn't feel right.
I know I'm laughing about this, and medical debt is not funny. But what is funny to me is the same sort of patterns that we have as humans that tend to cause a problem. So you said first open the bill, and that's one of the first patterns I see is people do not want to open those envelopes. And not because they think they've won the lottery, right? They don't want to open them because they don't want to deal with what's in there. And then the idea that once you open them and you get this, that it's probably right and that you somehow are in a position of having to be responsible for it rather than argue it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. People assume, especially with, you know, we love, love, love our nurses and we really appreciate our docs.
Yes.
And we assume because they're honest people that the whole bill is
Yeah.
going to be honest and everything in it is going to be honest. No, they're two different universes. So the docs, the providers, hospitals, they're the ones that are on the front lines providing the care, but it's a different universe who are sending the bill. And
Yeah,
if I
maybe.
have to tell you, if docs knew what was being billed in their name and being, just crushing their patients, human beings, and causing tremendous stress, which causes medical problems, chronic conditions, we would just be out. They would be outraged.
And just to be very clear about this, it may not even be the people sitting at the front desk that you see. It could be a total third-party company
It's
that bills
never the
everything.
person at the
Right.
front desk that you see. I
There you
guarantee
go.
you, it gets
There you
sent to
go.
someone else. There's nothing connected to your bill that you receive and the care that your physician and or the hospital provided for you. They're two different languages, two different worlds, and that's why you have to have what I call basic medical financial literacy
Right.
in the United States to protect yourself from getting crushed by medical bills. I say, most of us in the United States, in this country, living in this country, are just one injury or accident or medical problem or chronic illness away from chronic debt, a lifetime of debt, or worse,
Yeah.
bankruptcy.
Yep. Yeah. Again, a pattern I think for people is feeling shame, feeling pressure. Feeling like they want to be a good
Absolutely.
person, somebody saved their life, they should just find a way to pay this. It's not like your doctor or your medical team is either going to change your level of care or go out of business because you argue that your bill isn't correct. All you're trying to do is get it to be correct, figure out what you really owe, and then use your system to crush it down and then throw it into our system and speed up the
There you go.
payoff and give it that
Exactly.
double whammy. So, would you describe your three-step process for us?
Sure. So the first step, like we mentioned, is opening that bill and making sure, usually it's a snail mail bill that you get. I don't recommend that you go with the bill that they text you or that kind of thing, which is what they want to do. It sounds very conspiratorial, but I say they because it's a system, as you said. It's a corporation. It's a business. It's an industry.
Yes.
So the best thing to do is to get a snail mail, a real physical hard copy bill. Open it. And the first thing you're going to do, step one, is to make sure that you have what's called CPT codes. CPT codes are to medical services what barcodes are to products in a retail store. So, Dr. Francis, let's say that, you have your favorite brand of water and you're particularly thirsty this particular day as you're going past your bodega and you're coming back from your walk. And instead of the 8 ounce size, you're going to get the 16 ounce size. Well, when you scan it, that the barcode registers, hey, this is a 16 ounce of this brand. And so the computer knows on the other end what to charge. Same thing with CPT codes. It's a fancy name for codes, a barcode for medical services. And every medical service you can think of in the United States, any test, procedure, office visit, hospital visit, ER visit, has a specific CPT code. So anything that does not have a CPT code is not a real bill. And that's just, I tell people, 80% of the foolishness that gets sent, I have lots of stories about people believing that what they've opened and what they've been sent is a real bill. And there's no CPT code to the first, no CPT code found any place on this document, right?
Yes.
I call them lots of things. I call them invoices or statements. Often I call them wish lists because they're wishing and hoping and praying you'll fall for it, right? So that's step one. Make sure it has CPT or CPT slash HCPCS, HCPCS. It's a subtype of CPT code. And sometimes it's 5 digits, and sometimes it starts with a letter like an A, or for dental procedures with a D or something, but usually 5 digits. The thing is that if you're not sure, then call and ask. And that's part of step one. So step one, make sure you have a real bill with CPT codes. If you're not sure, your first step is to call the provider's billing department and say, hey, I got something in the mail. I usually say statement. I never say a bill. I got a statement in the mail and there's no CPT codes on it. I'd like to ask what the process is for getting a real bill or something. I usually say, quote, something with CPT codes, unquote. Who can I speak with who can help me get this? This is where the money is. The CPT codes are where the money is. And I still am surprised at, unfortunately, the training is with the folks in the front lines in the billing department and in customer service that they know this is where they've been trained to understand this is where the money is. And they'll tell you, well, no, we don't have that here. Or you're going to have to call your insurance for that information. Or, you know what, maybe medical records will have that. They'll play dumb, but yeah. That's what they were trained to do. Sometimes, rarely, you have to say, look, let's do this. Can I get a, quote, UB-04 form, unquote? And then all the pretenses stop. They know that you know what you're talking about, and they'll stop that foolishness. So a UB-04 form has CPT codes. It's what is sent from the provider to an insurance company. Whether you have insurance or not, they have a UB-04 form that they fill out for each patient.
Okay. I have to jump in on, and just before we go to break. First of all, I love to make up mnemonics to try and remember things. So for our people who are out there going, what kind of code do I need? Charging possibly too much.
No.
CPT.
No. Yes, no. You're on the right track, Dr. Francis, but the real what CPT code stands or CPT stands yes. for is can't pay this.
Can't pay this. I like that better. I like that better. And then the UB-04, I don't have anything for that except that I thought of the band UB2.
You've given me marching orders, Dr. Francis. I'm going to work on that, and I'll get back to you. We'll have to come up with something.
You better. Okay. And I'd love to talk to you more about this, and I'd love to hear. We have stories that will curl your hair about things people go through with medical debt. But this doesn't have to be huge medical debt. This can be small stuff. You just shouldn't have to pay it if it's wrong.
If it's too much for you, I call it bad medical bills. It's predatory billing, predatory medical billing. People have heard of predatory loans. It's predatory medical billing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't really realize it, you know, unless you have like a chronic condition or a big, huge accident or injury or something or surgery. And so you don't catch it. And so fine. But when it's a big bill, then you're like, okay, yeah, rut-row, what do I do now?
I need one of those can't pay this codes.
Exactly.
And a UB-04 form.
You better 04 form.
That's right.
All right, we're going to get into more of this for the second part of the show for financial fitness. But first, I want to get your phone number, Dr. Francis.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with Dr. Francis Ram, the Money Doctor, and Dr. Virgie next.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, we're here back with Dr. Virgie Ellington, Virgie Bright Ellington. And just to recap, she's an internal medicine physician and a medical billing expert with more than 20 years of experience in primary care. And she's a health insurance expert about billing, the author of What Your Doctor Wants You to Know, not What Your Doctor Doesn't Want You to Know, What Your Doctor Wants You to Know to Crush Medical Debt. Great title. And she has an insider. She's used her insider information to create this simple three-step process to crush your medical debt. And I found it enlightening, completely enlightening. And we're going to ask her a little bit more about this and Medicare and things like that. But first, I wonder if you would tell your personal story as a cancer survivor with your medical debt.
Yeah. So,
will you? Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for asking, because it's one out of eight. Back, I'm dating myself, but back when I was finishing med school and finishing residency, one out of 11, the number was one out of 11 women in the United States will be diagnosed with breast cancer at some point in their lifetime. I had my last oncology appointment a week ago today, and my oncologist told me, it's the 10-year anniversary, and she said, you're free to go. You just have to come back once a year. And that's because you had your first diagnosis was 10 years ago. And fortunately, it was something that was caught early because of mammograms. Get your mammograms done, ladies, please, please, please.
Every year.
So that was the first one. So I'm happy to share that because I'm a two-time mammogram success. And I will say
Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I feel very fortunate. I feel very fortunate. And because I had access to a mammogram when I needed it. So just cut to the chase, I was late for my mammogram in 2015. And it's like, you know, you've got to get this done. But, you know, life is busy. And then there was this guy that I really wanted to like get to know better that I met. And I was like, okay, well, you know, if we want to be in a mutual monogamous relationship, then we should both get our HIV test done and all the things, right? So I'm going to go get this checked out while I'm there. And lo and behold, the mammogram was abnormal. And fast forward, the diagnosis, biopsy pathology was positive for what's called HRPR positive, receptor positive, which is great because that's very treatable if you catch it early enough, which I did. So, you know, I share this story because a lot of us will put ourselves kind of like to the wayside. We're too busy, this and that. But if there's somebody that we want to do it for, our families, you know, that cute person, you know, you want to get to know better. Yeah. So, yeah, I told my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, that it's like, oh, the good news is, you know, my HIV test was negative. The bad news is I have breast cancer. So, yeah, all the things. So I had the lumpectomy and radiation therapy and all the things. And I didn't have reconstructive surgery for like a year after. And, you know, it was a great relationship. And so obviously if we got married later. So I share the story, ladies, to say, please, it makes a difference and don't put it off. And that thing was on the move. It had spread between the time that it got picked up on the mammogram to the time that I ended up getting the surgery done. So, you know, it's a big deal. Fast forward 5 years, really busy with work. It was way overdue with my mammogram. And I realized, you know what? I'm 5 years out. Less than 5 years out from a breast cancer diagnosis. And, you know, Virgie, what are you doing? Get your mammogram done. Same old story. Got it done. And they said, hey, there's something here. This time, though, Dr. Francis, it was the biopsy was positive for the scary breast cancer type, which is triple negative. It's hard to treat. It's super aggressive. And if it had broken through the duct, it was 1 millimeter from breaking through the duct. And they found by the time I got to surgery and had it removed. And it was so close that the pathologist called the doc in the surgery during surgery, which is what they do to make sure that it's clean, make sure they have all their borders, everything out. My surgeon called me the next morning and said, Virgie, I'm sorry. I know the pathologist said it's clean, but he called me back today and he said he feels uncomfortable. He can't get it out of his mind. It's only 1 millimeter. Mm. 1 millimeter. Which means, to cut to the chase, what that means is it was not months, not weeks, but days from breaking through the duct. If it had broken through the duct, I'd been 2 years maybe. I would have it would have taken out the mother of my kids. So I go on this diatribe, ladies, please. And if men, if you have a family history of women that have early breast cancer and ovarian cancer, get your genetic testing done so you can get your mammograms too. So anyway, I just have to say that. That's the story. And I was getting treatment and had a surgery that I was told, the doc said, okay, the oncologist said, all right, Virge, you know, great. You've got the surgery was great. I had multiple surgeries dealing with the cancer. And one of them is the hysterectomy to make sure you don't make hormones because of the first one.
Right.
And he said, you know, no lifting and, you know, you're good to go after, you know, my first checkup. And I was like,
you lifted?
Yeah.
Of course.
How did you know where that was going?
Physician, heal thyself.
I rolled. So 2 months later, I rolled in. I was rolled into an ER. The sutures had opened, which is they tell you why you don't lift.
Right.
And the bowel got caught in there and it was going gangrenous and I was going septic.
Oh my gosh.
So I woke up after emergency surgery and found out I had this sweet roommate, a young mom who had two toddler children who had been told that, you really need to stay and have this workup done for their concern. She had a stroke. And this had happened to her a year ago. And they said, you really need to stay. And she says, you know what? I don't think I'm going to stay because last time I was here for a whole week like now, and I got a huge bill. And the day that they said I could leave, somebody from the hospital department came in and said, before you can leave, you have to sign this document that says you agree to pay whatever your insurance doesn't pay.
Yeah, which I think is really common, actually.
It's common and it's called balanced billing, folks.
Yeah.
Don't fall for it. If you have insurance, don't fall for it. So if they're in network, that means that whatever the insurance agrees to pay, they have agreed to accept by contract. That's what a
Really,
network means.
that is
So that's a
really,
huge
really
deal. So
important.
it's one of the top five causes of inappropriate or predatory medical billing, meaning money that you don't owe, and that contributes to huge medical debt and bankruptcy. So that's the story. I
Yeah.
when she told me this, I realized that she had been taken advantage of. I could tell, well, this is balance billing they did to this poor young woman. And I tell the story, the curtain dropped. And I literally saw red. I was so enraged
Yeah.
because I knew she had been deliberately tricked into paying, agreeing, signing an agreement. If you sign on the
Yes.
line, you owe it, right? And I thought, you know what, Virgie, don't get mad. Don't get angry. Get to getting. Do
Yes.
something. And that's how Crush Medical Debt was born. So, yeah, it's
What
a long,
a
drawn-out
story.
story, but
Yeah.
folks, please get your mammograms done and never pay the first bill. There's a guy that wrote a book with that title, and it's true.
What a great story. And a couple of points I just wanted to touch on. I'm really glad that you mentioned men. People think breast cancer is only something women get, and men are at risk as well. And the second thing is this balanced billing. Now, I don't know about you, but I get little bills all the time that are past my copay, right? I go, I'm in network, I pay a copay, then I get a bill. In fact, I got one that was more than 2 years old. And I called them up and said, I don't think you can do this. Now, I don't know if I was right or not, but I was just like, you don't get to just bill somebody 2 years after the fact, having never billed me before and expect I'm going to pay this. And they just wrote off the bill, you know? You were talking about the three-step process, which we talked about in the first part. So maybe we recap that slightly. But there's something about Medicare, the amount of Medicare that Medicare will pay for a bill that feeds into your system. Can you talk about that a little bit? How you,
Yes.
yeah.
So Medicare is a little bit different. So the three steps, it'll help put this in
Yes.
perspective. The three steps, step one is to get a real bill with CPT code. Step two is to take that number, the actual CPT code, and it's really easy. Just go online, and there's lots of any platform, any AI platform will pull it up really easily. Put in the CPT code, and up will pop the description of what it represents, and while you're there, also ask, what does Medicare pay for this rate, or what's a Medicare range or payment range for this code, for this service? And that is where the money is, literally, as I mentioned earlier, was step one. So that's important, Dr. Francis, because Medicare, really actually 2 times the Medicare rate. In the medical legal system, the legal world, if you're disputing a bill, a fair rate is considered 2 times the Medicare rate. So
Yeah.
it's really important to get that number, that CPT code, take it to step two, and find out how much Medicare pays for that.
Yeah, it's a good benchmark, and you help people argue these bills, is my
Yeah, we
understanding.
do.
So, when we get these sort of balance bills, right? You get something in the mail that says your insurance paid $100 of the fee, and we billed 130, you owe 30. Are you saying that we don't owe that if we're in network? It's simply not owed,
Exactly. So
even on small
to
bills.
clarify that it is an inequity, you'll have providers, you'll call up and say, hey, do you take my insurance? They'll be like, oh yeah. And then you find out you get a bill from the provider and they'll say, well, you weren't in network. And the EOB will come about a little bit later, sometimes even precedes the bill. EOB
Right.
means explanation of
Explanation
benefits.
benefits, yeah.
If it usually it's something, it'll say, this is not a bill. If it comes from your insurance company, it's not a bill. It's just telling you what you may owe and informing you what or not the insurance paid.
Right.
You know, whether they paid or not. So the EOB will say, yeah, zero, zero, zero. We didn't pay any of that. No. And you'll go back and you'll say, well, you said you were in network. And they'll say, well, that's your responsibility to know what your insurance is and what is covered and what's in network. I actually helped a client with that who came to me, and we got it wiped away because in this case, it was basically a well-known in Boston diabetes center. She was new to new insurance, new job, new to the town. And when she was told, hey, Europe is your responsibility to find out if your insurance really pays, or you can't just take our word for it. And she was adamant. And I had the client on the line with me, and I called the provider, and I said, the client said that she called twice to make sure. And you guys record your stuff.
That's right.
And we had the date of service, or, you know, the date that she called, at least one of the dates that she called. And fast forward 20 days later, the bill was wiped away. So that's, unfortunately, that's, you know, AI can do a lot of stuff in terms of finding out what you've been overcharged for. But that's why, you know, I have the American Society of Certified Medical Bill Advocates. This is what we do, is to help folks with the human side, where it's a little bit more complex or a little bit more, they're trying to be a little bit more deceitful, unfortunately.
Hmm. Yeah, I know it's hard for people to believe that, but you really do have to be your own best patient advocate these days. And when it comes to the billing, you have to do that. And I love to talk to people like you because, you know, hug your money, you, we're all about everyday money. And that everyday money is really important. You know, you're about medical money. We're about debt, budget, retirement, all of that. So crushing the medical debt, when I first talked to you, I was like, this is so cool. You can whittle that bill down or get rid of it. And if you still owe something, you can throw it into a system like ours, along with your other debt, manage it with a little tiny payment, and pay it off ahead of schedule and save yourself a bunch of time. So, and money in the balance. So just to recap your core message as we're closing out here, and I'd love to have you come back if you're willing to come back and talk more about this.
I've got
stories and you've got stories and all of that. But your core message is about 80 to 90%, I think, or maybe even 80 to 100% of medical bills contain errors. I say this about credit reports all the time. And regular people can use your three-step process to slash that medical debt and crush medical debt.
Yep, so that's it. And exactly the third step is what we talked about in our last little story, is that you got to go back and negotiate. Step three is once you have the right number, you know what the right number is, you go back and say, you know what, I'm going to not use my insurance, I'm going to use cash. Mm-hmm. And this is a fair payment. Who can I speak with who can help me make a payment plan that fits my budget?
I've said the exact same thing over and over again on the show, like call them up and tell them it's cash and ask this thing.
That's right.
Okay.
Step three. Those are three steps.
Where can people get a copy of your book?
Oh, you can go anywhere you find your books online, you know, and Barnes & Noble, all the good stuff.
Amazon.
And you can also, And you can also go to crushmedicaldebt.com.
Thank you very much. And once again, the name of your book?
What Your Doctor Wants You to Know to Crush Medical Debt. I call it Crush Medical Debt for short.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Can I get your phone number?
Oh, of course. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bucci, for having me. I want to say 6 months later, I got a bill. I laugh about it. I tell the story. They tried to balance bill me for almost $90,000. Same exact hospital from that visit.
Wow.
And I'm cracking up, you know, I like, you know, they're trying to balance bill the author of What Your Doctor Wants You Know to Crush Medical Debt. Really? Oh, this is going to be fun. And they ended up in my book.
Oh, that's great.
That example.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
We resolved many things, but we didn't resolve was that the wife had the George Foreman grill that husband's grandma had given the couple for their wedding.
Oh my gosh.
and they couldn't resolve it.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the money doctor, Frances Ram. We have a guest today.
We have an attorney guest today, yeah. Christopher Anderson. I won't call you Attorney Anderson. We're going to talk about that for a minute. But he is an attorney, of course, and a family law attorney. So we're talking about something that could bring even the calmest people to their knees, probably. Divorce and money. And if that doesn't sound like it's going to be fun, hang in there, because I promise you, our pre-show chat that we did was so engaging that we asked him to come on for a special edition. So we're going to talk about how the financial side can be made fairer, more human, and less painful. So our guest, Christopher Anderson, will help us do that. He's a family law attorney and a former prosecutor who's not afraid to talk about the realities behind the numbers. So welcome to the show.
And the numbers behind the realities, you bet. I'm really pleased to be here. Thanks for having me. And you're right. Like it's a combination. Divorce brings it all together, right? You get to talk about money. You get to talk about family. You get to talk about religion. You get to talk about all the things that are the most difficult. But it is really important to have frank discussions about.
For sure. And the emotional side of it will run most of our conversation, I'm sure, because sure. That's what people deal with. But as the financial nerd that I am, we're also going to talk about forms, formulas, that so-called math for law. We'll talk about a little bit about math for law and how it might oversimplify real life numbers, right? And the difference between, you know, what equal and equitable mean and all the things that you would need to know, or you would want someone you cared for who was going through what I call the unmarrying process to know. And from the perspective from Christopher Anderson at Anderson Dodson and New Leaf, that is very human. And the idea here is that we're going to try to help you find a way, if you can do it amicably, to unmarry in a less stressful, more equitable, fairer way, even just through this one episode.
Yeah. And it all starts with having those frank conversations, right? You have to know and be willing to understand the financial situation and the rest of the situation in order to unmarry, to have it be amicable. You can't avoid it, right? If you're hiding your head in the sand is one way to make sure that you can't resolve it amicably.
I would like to start with something a little lighter before we get heavy with this. Sure. And I am going to take a subject that we talked about off the air about titles. So if talking with an attorney seems a little daunting to you, or you think that this show might not be for you, let me just introduce you to Christopher Anderson. And so you and I talked about why people call attorneys Attorney Anderson. And you said to me, it's not actually a formal honorific.
Things I've heard that one quite frequently. You know, when I was a prosecutor, people would call us ADA Anderson or Assistant DA Anderson or whatever. But there is no official honorific for an attorney. Like, and most attorneys in most states in the United States are actually their degree is a Juris Doctor. And nobody calls us doctor. So the honorifics, I think, just come from a place where when people deal with professionals, they're used to that, right? We do call our physicians doctor. Mm-hmm. And to a large degree, a lawyer is handling, you know, at a similar professional level, the intricacies of your life in a very meaningful way. And people want, I think it's more for the people who use the honorific than for the person having it added to their name, right? It's just this like, need to believe or to desire to believe that this person has some super special knowledge. We call our spiritual advisors by honorifics, you know, father or rabbi or or whatever, you know, depending on what sect it is. You know, there's so many different ones, you know, reverend, whatever it is. But so we do this with people to whom we're entrusting discretionary, professional, meaningful decisions to be made for us or with us. And I think that's where it kind of arises.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, people call me doctor, right? I don't ask for that. It's happened to me because of the PhD. But the funny part about that is I'm constantly having to say, I can't cure your rash. Don't tell me your medical problems. But I feel like there should be a distinction between maybe scholars and physicians or something like that, so that we separate PhDs like myself, who have no medical training, from MDs or other designations that are doctors. But there are lots of names that we give to attorneys that may or may not be right. Like I can think of counselor and esquire that probably you get called in court, right?
I don't want to like insult people out there, but the only people I've ever seen using esquire are people who are like,
yeah,
needing to like needing that for some reason. Counselor, I love, by the way. I think counselor is the, and usually like you won't hear counselor generally except from other lawyers or the judges. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a great place to start the show, because I think as a profession, and it's been from people who deal with us, you know, particularly in family law, we forget about that part of it. We call those attorneys at law, or, you know, Christopher Anderson, attorney at law. And like you said, Attorney Anderson, but it's the counselor at law that is so important as a role in family law, and so often forgotten, that you're dealing with a human being, and that most of the advice, most of the counsel you will give clients in this role isn't legal.
That's right.
People come to family lawyers, all lawyers, honestly, but family lawyers in particular, with personal problems, not legal problems.
Yeah.
The final resolution is often done in the law, and the solutions need to be done with knowledge of the law. Because, you know, you don't want to advise a client to do something that's not going to hold up in court. That's going to be, you know, that the courts are going to reject. It's going to be a waste of everybody's time. But other than that, like, a lot of it's just personal.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think counselor is a very, a perfect word for this, because a lot of times you are, I mean, let's just face it. When people come to us, you and I both deal with people in transition and with lots of emotional situations, money can be the most emotional part of it in some cases, right? And that sort of counseling, that that level of experience of helping them sort out what essentially can be a hot mess, right? To just sort it out and listen to people and say, what is it that's important to you? What are you trying to accomplish? How can I help you do that? That's not... Yeah,
that's it. And in fact, one of the things that I established as a driving factor of New Leaf Family, everybody that works here knows exactly that we will not begin an engagement with a client until we are certain, and more importantly, the client is clear as to what they're trying to accomplish. Like the words that you just used are the words. If we don't know what you're trying to accomplish, so people come to us, like you said, a hot mess. Like my spouse has just left me. My spouse has just sued for divorce. I just found out something that makes me want to sue for divorce, and da 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 da. And they're usually either dealing with something in the past that they're running away from, they want to get away from, or some conflict right now in the present, but haven't financially, emotionally, child raisingly, you know, all the things, haven't really given much thought to, all right, what does this look like 2 years from now? What do I want it to look like 2 years from now? And using that as their guiding force, what we call their Polaris, in driving the entire engagement.
Yeah, I can't agree with you enough on this. But I wonder, you know, in our world, people are often intimidated about talking about their money in general. When you add something like a marital problem to that, it compounds everything. They end up in front of an attorney because they have to. As you said, somebody files for divorce. The other person says, boy, I better get an attorney. And there you are, right? But Why do you think people are so intimidated by lawyers in the first place? It's why I started off with the why do we call them attorneys, right? Why are they so intimidated by attorneys in the first place, do you think?
The same reason they're intimidated by accountants or financial advisors or other professionals, doctors, because they're entering into a field of knowledge that they don't have. So they're entering into the unknown. And I mean, it's the one of the core essences of our beings. Is we got this nice, beautiful brain, but all the way in the middle in there is the little lizard brain with the amygdala that teaches us and reminds us all the time that unknown equals danger. Unknown That's right. equals scary. Unknown equals bad.
Yep.
And so, we start there, right? And then attorneys exacerbate the problem by using big words and speaking in ways that make them sound important and make the client feel smaller. And the problem just circles and circles and circles, which is why we always start the conversation with, what do you want? Because everybody can talk about that, right? Yes. But we've got no special knowledge to help you decide what you want. The most special knowledge I've got on that is to just say why a few times. Just getting down to that and hearing it, that, and then it all becomes less scary. But I think it's a problem of perception, like you said, from the client's perspective, because it's probably the first time, hopefully, that they've hired a family lawyer. The first time going through a court system that is not easily understood. Yeah. And their first time, dealing with these kinds of problems. And so you start from a scary spot. But we all can talk about what we want and where we want our lives to be.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the way our brain keeps us alive, because it's a story I've told on the air before, but you remind me of it, that when people really need, say, financial wellness, or they really need, a counselor to help them unmarry or get divorced, it is very scary, because your brain has been telling you, don't change. What you're doing has kept you alive so far, don't change. And so when people find it very difficult to change or very difficult to step over a line, I remind them of that and say, this is what your brain is telling you. Don't leave the cave. The cave is safe, right? But you're going to starve to death in the cave eventually. You need to learn how to live outside the cave. And so people will do that. And I think both of our professions, and it's one of my pet peeves, Jay will tell you, it's one of my pet peeves that financial advisors and attorneys both love to talk to you in jargon, in lingo, make themselves sound very knowledgeable. And to me, that means they're pretty insecure in their knowledge and insecure in their own skin. If they have to dazzle you with jargon rather than explain things to you in a way that you can understand and ask questions and feel comfortable about your own future in either case, then I think you look for another advisor or another counselor of some sort. And I don't like that sometimes attorneys and other professions hide behind the language, even in something like divorce, where people especially need clarity. So I just wanted to say I love the name of the firm, New Leaf, because it says something. It doesn't say, you win divorce court.
Right, right.
it says, New Leaf, family. I mean, yeah. I don't know who came up with the name, but you did, really? Yeah. I didn't know that, but I love it. I love
my wife and things. I did together, but yes.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do, to name things. And I don't think you could have done that any better. Three simple words that actually mean something. Bravo.
Thanks. Yeah. I appreciate it. And it does. It means a lot to us, right? There's a reason why but it goes back to that same question, right? And I hate to keep harping on it, but it always starts there. It's like, where do you want to be? Right? You're turning over a new leaf. Whatever, you're here because something's not working. Now, do some of our clients reconcile? Sure. And we're thrilled. We're thrilled when they do, because that's the future they want.
Right.
Not because of what we were just talking about, because they're going back to a place of known and perceived safety that is not what it's just perceived safety. It's not actually safe. And by safe, I don't mean like they may be in danger. Sometimes they are, right? Sometimes they're in an abusive situation sometimes. And they will go back to it. But sometimes it's just they're not being fulfilled. They're in a situation where they are staying in a relationship because of the perceived safety rather than their full potential. And that's what New Leaf is all about. It's really just being able to enter into that full potential. The idea of not just turning over the new leaf as a book, but growing as a new leaf, as a new plant, that can reach where it's trying to go, where it needs to go to really be its full bloom.
All right. We're at a point. Let's take a break if we can. Francis, I'm sure people have questions. First of all, let's get your phone number for them.
Of course. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or as always, just go to hugyourmoney.com. And we'll be back with more of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jay Dean, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and a very interesting guest today. Christopher, this is great.
Well, thank you. It's so far been in a very, I think an important conversation, enjoyable, but an important conversation.
What you had said in the other segment was that you want to obviously have a client know what they want. It's just so funny. In one particular book that I narrated, and I can't remember which one was the conflicting thing, but the author said many times people either don't know what they want or, for you to help somebody, obviously they've got to tell you what they want to have, what they want accomplished.
It's, Jay, it's remarkable that, again, like what I was talking about earlier, is that, potential clients come to us running away from something or embroiled in conflict. And in their ears already, almost always, are friends, family, work colleagues, et cetera, all with their own, mission, with their own perceptions, with their own desires and hopes and fears that they're all plugging into our potential client's brain. And, without ever, by the way, being honest about what's driving the advice that they're giving, because they've all got their own issues going on, but nobody is asking the question. And so like when I say, like we call it at New Leaf Family, we call this the Polaris process. Like it's something we must do before we will really get into an engagement. And because the client has, it's not like the client doesn't know, it's that they haven't had time or space to think about what that future is. So, and it's like I said, it's not magic and it's not big fluffy words, but it's asking clients things like, so this, a year from when we're finished, so 2 years from now, where are you living if everything works the way you want it? And not just like what town, but tell me about your house. What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it feel emotionally like to live there? Who lives there with you? Where do your children live? Where do they go to school? What's your children's relationship like with your now former spouse? What's your children's relationship like with you? What's the children's relationship like with your parents, with his, blah, blah, blah. Like these are the questions. Where do you go to vacation? Where are the kids going to school? How do they get there? Just the mundanity of life, because that's what they haven't thought about. And what's really cool, and this is kind of like bringing coaching into the legal practice. What's really cool about it is when you have that conversation and you help them to paint a picture of this future house, paint a picture of the relationship with the kids, paint a picture of where they go to school, where you're going on vacation. It creates a reality that they can now really work towards. And a reality that now when they say, I want you to file this and I want to do this discovery and I want to do this stuff and that stuff. And you can then point to that future that they painted and say, do you understand that that might damage this picture? We might have to repaint this picture because of the decisions that you're making or want to make. And so let's talk about it in the context of that future. What a different conversation than, no, that's not a good idea. Why? Because I'm the lawyer and I know.
Right.
Right. Very, very different conversation.
You know, that's fascinating. I was grinning away while you were saying that because, of course, that's what we do here in terms of saying to people, and I was going to bring this up when we came back from break. They often just haven't identified what they want. They haven't given it a name. Yeah. So when I start saying, well, what's important to you? What do you want? They want to tell me numbers. Well, I want to be wealthy. I want to retire in 2 years. I want to do that's the outcome you want. What does it look like? What does it feel like? How are we going to get there? What are you willing to do to get there? What aren't you willing to do to get there? You know, are your goals realistic? And if not, can we redefine them? Do you have a cat or not who is going to bother you in the middle of a show? Would you excuse me? Well, Lola, are you just going to join us?
Oh, Lola.
If she will stay off camera, we can just continue, I guess. But do you see her little ears popping up?
I did see an ear, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Do
she's
you have
a Bengal,
a cat
right?
named Lola? Yeah, she's a Bengal. That's the point is, you know, people will say, well, they'll fight over the pets.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind the kids, a lot over the pets, right? They'll argue over anything. And the idea of having a firm work with you that does not perpetuate the argument because of legal fees, that instead is interested in resolving this in a way that is amicable and as fair as possible, given the participation of both people in the mix there, I think is incredibly valuable. I mean, in this conversation, it's really about doing something that's very, very difficult in a probably becoming more popular, but in a bit of an unusual way. When you think of divorce, you think of war. You don't think of, well, let's sit down and see what my future is going to look like.
Right, right.
But
and
that's the important
either side.
Point.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, exactly right. And even like there's even some movements out there. One's called the collaborative law movement. And there are others to try to do things more amicably. But to a large extent, they all suffer from the exact same problem, the lack of this envisioning of the future of each party for themselves,
yes.
So that they can then know what they're working towards. Because otherwise, if you don't think about the future, it's going to turn into a zero-sum game about fighting over the past.
Yes.
That's what the fight over the pets are. That's what the fights over the kids are. It's this reality that's gone, but that we're still holding on to and trying to carve up, as opposed to this future reality that is in abundance and doesn't need carved up, because each person can have their own entire future that doesn't need to take anything away from anybody else. And then when you can come at it from that perspective, it becomes easier.
Christopher, I was going to ask, as you're in that setup to try to ask these questions of a client, does it many times confound the client?
Absolutely.
Slow the process up because they go, I don't know.
Absolutely. And that's the point. Right. And like that if they could like kind of like what Francis was saying, if they come in and go like, I would like to have a $500,000 house in Buena Del Vista, Florida, whatever. Like, that's not real, right? It may be rehearsed or somebody else's idea of it, or once in a while they have done the work and they really have thought about it. But then you can tell because they look beyond you and they're seeing it. Then you know. But yes, it does confound them because nobody's asked them, and it confounds them when we do, because that's not the conversation they're expecting from their lawyer. And so, which is good. It's a little bit of a pattern interrupt, which we need, in order to begin to have the meaningful conversations rather than, he took my mom's gray rug. I tell a story. I did a hearing once when I was a pretty young attorney, but I'd already started having these thoughts about what it should be. And I was doing a hearing. I was doing a divorce, and we resolved many things. But what we didn't resolve was that the wife had the George Foreman grill that grandma, husband's grandma, had given the couple for their wedding.
Oh my gosh.
And they couldn't resolve it.
Yep.
And they wouldn't agree about it. And they were going to go to a hearing about it. We're in the courtroom.
Oh my goodness.
And I take out my checkbook and I say, how much is a George Foreman grill?
Yeah.
I will write a check to the person who gives up the George Foreman grill out of my own money. I will not bill either of you for this, for the George Foreman grill, to avoid me appearing in front of a judge to talk about a George Foreman grill.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it.
They wouldn't do it, I bet. Exactly.
Wouldn't do it. We had the hearing.
Yep. And did the judge scold them and send them out into the hall, or what happened in the end? Do you remember?
The judge just heard it, awarded the George Foreman grill, and then pulled me aside because
don't ever come in here again.
The court, no. The court officer told him about the check and everything.
Oh, good.
The judge knew what had gone on. And it was just like, and he just was like, you can lead him to water. The judge got it, but you know, the judge could have sent them out in the hall, probably should have sent them out in the hall, and to resolve it. But you talked about pets. Like, people, you know, will get over, and it's not about their love for the animal. It never is.
Yeah.
It's about their wanting to either take it away from the other person or about holding on to, again, carving up the past.
It's absolutely true. And I'll just to make a comment about what we were speaking to a minute ago, I think many or even most people have not asked themselves what they want when they get through this. They're in a tailspin. You know, either they're the one filing or the one, you know, receiving that filing, and their life is changing drastically, and it may involve kids, and it may involve pets, and it may involve property, but it always involves money. And people, you're trying to take one household, usually, that two incomes are supporting, and you're trying to split it into two households, and nobody wants to make any compromises. And you have the same income. I'm sorry, folks, something's got to give somewhere. And so I do want to get into what's the difference between equal and equitable.
Mm.
But first, I just want to ask you, I think what you're saying is the same thing I find, which is when people are arguing about the money in the divorce, and I don't think there's any way to separate that. Almost everybody argues about the money, and it's a majorly emotional problem more than the math. They're using it as a stand-in for something else: fairness, validation, control. It isn't about the pet. It isn't about the George Foreman grill, and it isn't about the money, even though we all think that it is. Do you agree with that?
100%. 100%. It's either holding on to the past or being embroiled in the current conflict. And a failure to have that that thought experiment about the future. Because if you can just get away from it for a second, you can just say, hey, just take a break. Take a sec. Look around you. There are people who are not married who live in their own house.
That's right.
With their kids.
Yep.
And they're not on the street. Like, never. There are people who never got married and they're doing it. It's not like what you just said, Francis, is totally true. Like, two can live cheaper than one. Then two people separately, for sure. It is a different lifestyle. And there are things that are different, and there's also the opportunity to enhance what you bring in. And like, people, again, right, if you haven't thought about the future, all these things are unknowns. And what are unknowns? Unknowns are
scary.
Scary. And so, yeah, it's clinging to a past and also dealing with, so there is clinging to a past and dealing with perceived slights and looking for some, you said, equity, fairness, justice, in all of it, as opposed to, you know, sitting down and saying, you know what, that life is over. It's over. I may still be in the house, but I'm a tenant now.
Yeah.
I'm a private pilot. And one of the things they teach early on when I was learning is, if something happens while you're in the air and you know your plane is now disabled in some way, you're flying the insurance company's airplane, right? Your job now is to get you and these passengers down alive, and you're not worried about like this beautiful airplane that you own is gone. It is gone. Like just that's no longer a thing. Now you're dealing with your future and these people's future. And that's how you have to think about the divorce too. It's like that old life is over. You may still be in the illusion of it, but it's over. So it's time to start getting you landed in a place where you're safe and able to continue.
And we're sure we have some questions. Francis, can we first get your phone number?
Absolutely. It's 413-773-3333.
And are we going to fill folks in too about how to connect with Christopher at New Leaf?
newleaf.family. And you get like no.com or anything else, just www.newleaf.family. And we're going to do /moneydoctor. So if you want to find particular things that are pertinent to this conversation, you just go to www.newleaf.family/moneydoctor and you can contact us there.